Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to be part of your day, and I know it's a dream come true for you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We got some good stuff lined up for you straight ahead. Matthew Cartwright is with us. Matthew is the attorney, the resident attorney in our brain trust, and he's, especially when it comes to small business contracts, he's here to talk to us about that. He's one of the partners in the law firm Munley, Munley & Cartwright out of the great state of Pennsylvania. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim, and it's always a pleasure for me, too.
It's good to have you back, and one of the things you and I have been talking about, and I think this is, I really like the fact that you're helping us understand contracts better. And folks, if you want to know more about small business contracts, go back and listen to some of the interviews that Matthew and I've done that are archived on our website at smallbusinessadvocate.com. And this is kind of a body of work that he and I are putting together to help you understand the contracts that you have, because you're more and more of you, ladies and gentlemen, are going to be doing contracts. You're going to be doing more contracts and less business with a handshake. You're going to be doing more business with larger companies as small business owners become more likely to be a partner, a vendor partner, an integrated partner with larger companies than just a vendor. And so, and if you're going to do that, you're going to need to know what those contracts mean, what they say, and how you're obligated. And so Matthew's been helping us with that. And Matthew, one of the things you want to talk about today, I think, is something you call confession of judgment clauses. Now, what is that?
I do. You know, last year, Jim, you and I started talking about something that has bothered you about doing business with some of your business partners, and that is bullying language in contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things about small businesses is that they don't have legal departments in them. A lot of times it's a close call about whether they even have routine lawyers that they consult on everything.
Right.
And, do I consult the lawyer about this lease? Do I consult the lawyer about this partnership agreement? Somewhere the line is drawn, and I just know that typical small business owner will often fly without a lawyer. So something like this could be helpful to them so they know what they're getting into when they read these business contracts.
Well, you're exactly right, Matthew. And let me throw out a couple of reasons why what you're saying is absolutely true. Number one, they may not actually have, as you said, a direct relationship with a lawyer. They may not have, and if they know a lawyer, that lawyer might not be a good contracts lawyer. And that's one thing that I think is important to point out. All lawyers are not created equally, and some of them are better at contracts than others, and some of them are not so good at contracts. And I have to, that's just a fact, Matt. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but I found that to be true. And the other thing is if I've got this contract in front of me, Matt, that means that I've got business. I've got an opportunity. I've worked hard on this thing. I've given this company a proposal. It's a big deal to me. I want this to happen. And if I get a lawyer involved, he or she's just going to muck it up for me. They might tell me I don't need to do things they're just being overcautious, and I don't want anything to mess this deal up. I want this deal. That's another attitude.
You're exactly right, and I'll tell you, my approach to this whole thing, I'm a trial lawyer. I get into these business deals after they've gone south, after
right.
there's a conflict, after a loss has occurred, and from my own experience, I usually represent the smaller of the two businesses at war, and that's what I see. I see that this is a contract that was signed where the small businessman or woman did not have a lawyer and did not fully appreciate all of the clauses in the contract.
And they see these clauses that are what you're calling the bullying clauses. And when we say bullying, folks, I mean I've seen the bullying clauses with partners that I've done business with, and I didn't think that they were being mean. I just thought that their attorneys were putting things in the contract to protect them, and as my attorney would put things in the contract to protect me, to my advantage. But the thing you have taught us, Matt, is that some things can be taken out of contracts.
Right, and I think the classic example of a bullying provision in a contract is a confession of judgment clause.
Which is a new wrinkle that we haven't talked about before, and we're going to talk about that when we come back after these messages. You're going to find out what a confession of judgment clause is and what you can do about it if one finds its way into a contract that you're signing, especially with a larger company. 22, we'll be right back with our good friend Matt Cartwright. Stay with us.
Got you on my mind. Happy
anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. We're back at 17 till, and Matthew Cartwright is our guest, and he probably doesn't realize it, but Matthew, this is our third anniversary. Me and you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you. Thank you for 3 great years and happy anniversary, baby. How many other radio shows have you had a third anniversary with? Tell me that.
Not many. I count them on one hand.
Well, probably one finger. But anyway, thank you for being so faithful to us over the last 3 years and for sharing your valuable information.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
All right, let's talk about confessions of judgment clauses. Folks, what we're doing is we're kind of breaking down all these different little sections of contracts. Many of these things are often in the bottom part of the contract. They're in what I often call the ash and trash, the obligatory part, the parts that oftentimes people don't even read, Matthew. Many times people don't even read these things because they assume that they have to be there. They're sort of the automatic stuff. And that's not necessarily true, is it?
Well, sometimes they have to be there. Sometimes it's kind of industry standard that they're in there. But you shouldn't ever assume that. So yep. You're right. And I think confession of judgment clauses are number one in that category. It's not necessary that they be in there. And it's really only when you deal with financial institutions, lending institutions, that is kind of industry standard that they go in there.
Mm-hmm. What does a confession of judgment clause look like? What does it sound like?
Well, if you read it, what it does is it gives your trading partner your authorization to take judgment in court against you in the event that you have breached one of your obligations under the contract or the lease. And the problem is, well, there's a lot of problems with that. It leaves the other side making the decision as to when you are in breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
It means if you have a disagreement about whether you did breach the contract or maybe you felt it was the other side that did something wrong that led to your action, you don't get to bring that up in court on equal footing. In other words, you start from being in the position of being in a hole. You start from the position of already having a judgment taken against you. You've already lost your case, in other words, once you get to court. So when you see this clause, you read the contract, you see the clause, it'll say that your business trading partner has the right to go into court, any court of competent jurisdiction, and enter a judgment against you. They call it a confession of judgment. It's sort of you're pre-signing your confession, Jim.
But it's the header, the subheader in the contract won't actually say confession of judgment clause, will it?
No. Sometimes
they're a little more subtle than that, aren't they?
Right. It'll usually say lessor's remedies or lender's remedies, something like that. But the tip-off is that if you read the substance of it, it says they have authorization to go into court and enter a judgment against you. A judgment is the end of a trial.
Right, right. A judgment is when the gavel drops.
Yeah, so you've just forfeited your trial when you sign the contract.
So if I sign an agreement like that and we get into the functioning of the agreement, and somehow or another there's a dispute over whether I performed or not, and it's reasonable, people can disagree whether I performed or not. But what you're saying is if they determine on their own that I'm not performing under the contract, they can take me to court, and if I've signed this agreement with that confession or judgment clause in there, what does the judge do when it gets in front of him or her?
Well, the judge doesn't do anything. The judgment is already entered, and if you want to fight about it, you have to go in with your hat in your hand and ask the judge to open the judgment. Instead of starting out the case on an equal footing, in other words,
right,
you're starting out the position of having to pull yourself out of a hole before the fight even starts. So you have to persuade the judge to open the judgment, and to do that, you have to persuade him or her that you have a strong chance of prevailing on the merits of the case, even before the judge is going to do what we call open the judgment and let you into a defense.
So the first decision for the judge is not whether you're right or not. The first judgment is whether to even listen to you or not.
Exactly, and to do that, you have to. There. Each state has its own requirements, but by and large, it looks like this: you have to move quickly. There are decisions out there that say if you wait as long as a month to petition to open a judgment, that's too long. So you start out under the time gun, but you also give up huge tactical advantages to the other side, because to persuade a judge to open the judgment, you have to persuade that judge that you have a pretty good case, that they're not wasting their time.
Right.
Opening the judgment and horsing around with a trial.
Hold on to that thought, Matt. When we come back, I'm going to get Matthew to explain to us how to make sure that the contracts we sign don't have that in there. That if it is in there, what do we do about that? We're going to do that right after these messages. It's 10 Till. This is good stuff. Matthew Cartwright is our guest. He's the resident attorney of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust, and he's the partner in Munley and Cartwright out of the great state of Pennsylvania. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're talking with Matthew Cartwright, and he's an attorney with Munley Cartwright, actually one of the partners there in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and actually other places around the great state of Pennsylvania, aren't you, Matt?
We have 7 branch offices in northeastern Pennsylvania, and we also do cases in along the East Coast. For example, we have lawyers admitted in New York, and we do cases all over the Eastern Seaboard, Jim.
And you represent a lot of small businesses, don't you?
Yeah, we do. I love representing the little guy, and it always seems to shake out that way. Gives me a perspective that kind of helps out some of your listeners.
Absolutely, no question about it, and we benefit from that. Okay, now, by the way, before we go any further, give us the website at Munley Cartwright.
Oh, sure, it's Munley.com, Munley.com.
So check that out when you get a chance, folks. It's not your grandfather's attorney's website. Okay, we're talking about confessions of judgment. It's a clause. And I said to you off the air, Matthew, that I don't think I've ever seen a confession of judgment clause in a non-financial contract. In other words, if I was, I know when I sign a note with a bank or something like that, there's a confession of judgment clause in there somewhere. But in terms of a lease or other types of contracts that I see, I don't think I've ever seen one before. And you're telling me you're seeing them more and more now. They're migrating. Well, they're migrating over into regular contracts.
Well, you're right. It's the typical clause that appears in a loan document, and really, it's simple to figure out whether you've defaulted on a loan. You missed a payment.
Right.
Behind in your payment. And it's kind of industry standard in the financial business to see those in there. So good luck trying to get a bank to take out one of those clauses.
Right.
But they are creeping into other things like commercial leases. Actually, I've seen them in commercial leases for years. But when you get into a business trading situation with a much bigger company with its own legal department, you're gonna see more and more of these things. And if I can tell you, the big tactical disadvantage of signing one of these things is, sure, a judge may open a judgment against you, but look at what you had to do just to let yourself into defending yourself in court. You had to persuade the judge that you have a good likelihood of winning your case.
Well, it's the opposite of what our system is based on. You're actually, in this particular case, if you sign this judgment, you're guilty until presumed innocent.
Those were my exact thoughts, but it's more than that. To do that, think of what you have to do. You have to persuade the judge that you have a good shot in the trial. To do that, what do you have to do? You have to lay your cards out.
Right.
And that means you're laying your evidence out from the word go in one of these cases, and that gives the other side an immense tactical advantage, because everybody knows you don't lay your cards out as a trial lawyer until you absolutely have to, because the more time the other side has to pick apart your case and look for the weak spots, the better off they're going to be.
Matthew, tell us, in the minute and a half we got left, tell us how do we get one of these clauses out?
Well, it's like some of the other clauses we've been talking about. You have to, first of all, you have to make a decision about, is this one of the things that the other side is going to give on? I think recognizing that it's in there is probably half the battle.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize it's in there. So read your contract, make sure it's not in there. If it is, you can see, and you can see that's one of the issues you've got to handle at the negotiation table. Don't uncork that champagne just because you got the deal. You don't have the deal until all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and the lines are signed. But you see that in there, you're looking across the table at your trading partner and you say, look, you didn't give me a confession of judgment clause against you.
Right.
I'm an honorable businessman. I intend to pay my bills. I intend to fulfill my promises. If you want to work with me, this doesn't need to be in here. If we have an honest dispute, whoever's right is going to win in court and doesn't need to win by default.
And all you have to do is line through it and initial it and get them to initial it, and it's out.
That's exactly right, Jim.
So, folks, please check on. And in my opinion, if anybody you're in a straight up business deal with them, it was sealed with a contract, and they want to have a unilateral confession of judgment in the contract against you, then you've got the wrong partner, folks. Find a new one. Hey, Matt, thanks for being here. Good job today.
And the same to you, my friend.
We'll see you next time. Matthew Cartwright, ladies and gentlemen. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.